This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Emily Yateman, Executive Director of Living Streets Alliance. Welcome, Emily.
Hi, Ava. Thanks for having me today.
Emily, Living Streets Alliance has a mission of advocating for streets in our town as living public spaces that connect people and are great for all of us. Perhaps most people know LSA as the hosts of Ciclovia, where art, culture, play, and movement take over the streets. What other ways do Living Streets Alliance invite us to reimagine the street as a blank canvas that we could do so much more with than just drive cars through, especially with today's pandemic-related needs?
Most people have the experience of interacting with their streets when they're getting in and out of their cars or walking out front to check the mail. But we don't, I think, on a normal day, typically interact with our streets very much. And one thing that's been encouraging, or at least a silver lining, if you will, in this pandemic is that it's given people a moment to pause, and they've had an experience of their streets as actually becoming spaces to get out and exercise, spaces to see signs of life, right? Like interact with neighbors. And throughout all of this, we've been getting a lot of people reaching out, sharing stories of how they met their neighbor for the first time, who they've, you know, lived down the street from for 10, 15 years. So we're really seeing that streets are becoming a really vital place for interaction and for exercise, recreation during this pandemic, and for expression. I think it's been one of the ways that we can tangibly connect with others around us, since most of us are isolated in our homes and behind screens all day. And so it's really inspiring. I think a lot of people will have witnessed by now something that they've seen when out walking in their neighborhood, where, you know, whether it's chalk drawings or decorations in front of someone's house where a family member wanted to decorate for a birthday, or these are really becoming spaces for us to share and co-create. And that's something at Living Streets Alliance that we think about and encourage throughout the year. And have been doing for the past 10 years. But this has really put a new light on the possibility.
And even today is a different day from when I first started thinking about how to ask you this question, because the streets have also become a place where freedom of speech is or is challenged, where protest zones are happening, where a lot of different forces are coming to play in different streets all over the country, which is, you know, kind of much more broad than the everyday usage of streets that we're thinking about, but is also relevant in the sense that reimagining streets has radical potential. Could you talk to us a little bit about flex zones?
So this is something that we've been watching and observing in other cities across our nation, but also internationally, right? There's so many cities are ahead of us in terms of how they're opening back up or how they're coping with the pandemic. And one of the things that we've observed is streets that are, you know, have a lot less car traffic right now or a lot less need for parking are being turned into temporary spaces for dining, for additional recreation space, or for, you know, movement on bike and on foot, so that people can, you know, still get out and have a safe distance to do that from other people looking to do the same. So, I mean, you might hear a term called a streetery. That's essentially where a restaurant takes the parking lot adjacent to it, or maybe the parallel parking spaces in front of it, and converts those into extended dining space. And that's really important because a lot of restaurants are struggling with making the numbers add up, right? Like they want to be able to open back up. They miss their customers miss them, but they also want to ensure that they can do it safely and that their staff is going to be safe, their families are safe. And since they have to put, you know, 6 feet of distance between their tables, they need more space. Like they literally can't fit inside their normal footprint. So this is a way that I think people are going to start experiencing their streets differently. And I think our hope is that it sticks because this is our most abundant form of public space as a city. We have a tremendous amount of resources that people put into our streets by way of taxes and that we could do so much more with. So hopefully this starts to change people's perceptions of what's possible and the ways we could use our streets to improve our quality of life.
Well, and not to mention that dining al fresco is just lovely. And also outdoor activities are currently safer than indoor ones. So it's a fascinating time to see what could happen next and how we could reimagine these spaces. Even what you just said about streets themselves being the public spaces that we have in the most abundance. It's something I hadn't really thought of. I hadn't really thought of streets in that manner.
Yeah. And if you've ever been to a city that you really enjoyed, you probably experienced streets functioning very differently. And it's probably something you didn't even think about because it just felt so natural and the conditions were so welcoming and comfortable that you didn't even notice that it was different because it's so inviting. And that's one of the things that we really focus on at Living Streets Alliance is trying to create a different experience for people. And, you know, a really good example of that is right in front of Exo Rosco over at 6th Avenue and 7th Street, where we effectively transform that intersection using things like paint and planters and flex posts, because we had heard that that was not only a problematic intersection for people walking, but also Amy, the business owner there, really wanted more space for her patrons to be able to sit outside and interact with the street, interact with other businesses and people coming and going throughout the day. And so that was a way of creating public space in that street where you can actually now go and feel the difference and see what it looks and feels like. And so that's a really powerful thing. That's a lot of what Ciclovias are about, is making what is possible visible and tangible for people.
I think that today the general public, well, and I speak, you know, out of my own experience, but I think it's pretty typical. We tend to think of roads as being built for cars, but actually they were not originally built for cars. And if we take stock of that history, it helps us to think differently and realize that roads don't have to be assigned for cars now either. What changes have to happen in our thinking in order for us to design roads and streets in a more human-centered way?
I mean, one place to start is the concept of complete streets. And one of the big things that we've been working on with our organization that culminated in an ordinance being adopted by Mayor and Council at the beginning of last year was a complete streets policy. And really, what that's about is thinking about how you start to build a network of streets throughout your city so that no matter who you are or how you get around, how young or old, from what part of town, how much money you do or don't have, your race, right? Like these things that are really make a difference in how you get around, that you're going to be guaranteed a safe and comfortable and dignified experience getting around our city. And so I think the way to think about complete streets is it's not a one size fits all approach. I think a lot of people think, oh, a complete streets is there has to be a bike lane on every street. There has to be a sidewalk on every street. There has to be, you know, A, B, C, D, but really it's thinking about what's the use in the area, right? Like, so is this a commercial area where maybe it makes sense to try and minimize car traffic so that we can have a more enjoyable environment for people to linger and shop and walk and move about on foot and on bike versus something where we are trying to get across town. And maybe there you definitely don't want bikes being exposed to those conditions, because that's scary. So it's thinking about how we ensure that you you have a continuous network, right, to get around if you're on foot, if you're on bike, if you're taking transit, if you're in a car, and that when those two kind of grids, if you will, come together, that there's safe interactions between those different ways of getting around. So, you know, in Tucson, we have a lot of the push button signals called HOCs that were actually developed here. And that's a good example of when we have a bikeway or a really important crossing for people on foot, that we have a way of signaling to the drivers going by that it's important to stop, so that, you know, if you're with your five-year-old on your bike, you know that you can push that button and there's going to be a red light to ensure that you can get across safely. It's really thinking about getting inside different people's heads and thinking about the different type of person and how they get around and the context of their everyday lives and what things might influence their decisions, what things might make them feel safer, comfortable, and building and designing from there. And making sure too that we're really talking with different kinds of people too, right? So engaging with folks in different ways. So again, not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Who are Tucson's streets the most dangerous for?
It varies. I think for people walking, we see a lot of fatalities on our major, you know, fast streets like Speedway, for example, or Grant. We know we have had some really, really high fatality rates of people on foot being involved in car crashes. But it really does affect everyone. It's, you know, for young people, it's one of the leading causes of death from injury in Arizona. It's something that we see all over the city, but areas that lack good lighting, right? So people who want to be out walking at night don't have good lighting, drivers can't see them. There's a lot of conditions that make it unsafe, and that's obviously compounded when we have areas that are disinvested over time, or that haven't had the same amount of infrastructure in place to ensure that it's safe. So there is, you know, it's interesting thinking about what's happening in our country right now and the inequities that exist, not just with how our streets are built, but who can feel safe and comfortable walking and being in them. It's a really important moment to be examining that and thinking about it.
I've even had a close call walking my bike across in a crosswalk on Grant, since mm-hmm. you mentioned Grant. And it was just too busy a time of day. And the first kind of line of traffic saw me and slowed and came to a stop. But then the traffic behind it wasn't paying enough attention, I guess, and didn't see, and then slammed into the front row of traffic. So it actually caused a big crash.
There's a saying, right design invites right use. And really the idea is that if you can design a road in a way that engineers out points of conflict, you can avoid crashes. You can avoid those sorts of things. So there are ways to design our streets that would have made it easier for you to get across and easier for the people driving to know how to maneuver and what to expect as well. So I think design is a really key factor in all of this.
What big wins have you seen for Tucson streets since Living Streets Alliance started advocating years ago? How many years has it been?
We've been doing this about 10 years. We're going on our 10th year right now. And that really started with Ciclovia, which started in 2010. So there's been a lot of really exciting wins, or certainly benchmarks or things that, you know, have shown us that we are moving in a new direction. And that's really exciting. You know, Ciclovia in and of itself started as a collaborative effort between some local governments and some local partners and a bunch of volunteers. That was in 2010, one event, and, you know, 5,000 people came out, and it was really exciting. And I think for myself and everyone else who's been involved in Living Streets Alliance and getting it off the ground, that was a really pivotal moment, a really tangible moment of witnessing just how things could look and feel different, and that people want that, right? There were a lot of people that came out and were like, wow, this is amazing. We need to keep doing this. So Ciclovia, we now get to do twice a year, and we get about 45,000 people out every time. And so that in and of itself is really powerful, because that's, you know, 85, 90,000 people a year that are getting to experience their streets differently and discover new parts of town and connect with new people and discover things. And so that's a great exploration of our city. And then let's see, other things that I'm excited about, the Parks and Connections Bond, which passed 2018. That's a really exciting development for our city, because it means that we're not only able to enhance our parks and bring a lot of them up to snuff the way that we know they could be, but it's also going to ensure that there's really safe connections to get there if you're, you know, want to ride there with your kid on your bike, walk down the street. It's going to ensure that there's safe connections to get to those places. So that funding mechanism is a really exciting development, not just because of the money, but because it shows that there's so many people that want and support these things. And so I think that was a really big, exciting time for us. And then, of course, the Complete Streets Ordinance was also really important, and mostly because we put a lot of thought and intention into how the ordinance was developed and written, and tried to demonstrate different ways of engaging people in that process, which is hard because, you know, ordinances are really abstract and pretty boring, I think, for most people. But we found some really creative ways of engaging different people from all walks of life in that conversation. And it really did inform the ordinance so that it's very values driven, and it's very values driven by the values of people living in Tucson.
Did you feel like there was a part of any of those processes that really stuck with you and made you say, okay, this is a way to get things done? This is a way to move things forward?
Well, you know, I have to say my background is originally in the arts and then landscape architecture. I worked at the Museum of Contemporary Art here in town. And I was actually reminded, seeing that Christo, the installation artist, just passed away. And I was reminded of something that a mentor shared with me years ago, or reflecting on his work. And she said, that's, you know, this isn't, his work isn't the end product. It's not the thing you see. His work, his artwork, is in bringing community together to create something beautiful, or to change something. And for me, that's always been the most exciting part of this work. And we've gotten to do it, you know, we get that feeling every time we do Ciclovia, but I think it's also been really fun to have an artistic element in some of the projects that we've been doing with communities lately, where we do these, you know, street transformations, where we do murals and we work with families and schools and local artists to you know, basically bring expression into the streets and cultivate that sense of place that's already there, but really help bring it to life a little bit more. So those are that's to me the best part of this work.
I would argue that designing streets more innovatively and creatively is artistic in and of itself. But what might you say, Emily, about the role of art in the street?
Art is critical, I think, right? Because otherwise it's a lot of asphalt and a lot of gray and a lot of hard surfaces. And I think that art brings color, and art brings story and narrative and history. Art brings so much. And, you know, it's amazing. It really doesn't take very much. I think a process that's thoughtful and inclusive gets people talking and sharing stories, and that can all happen in block parties, right? You can throw a block party, you can get neighbors talking about their histories together, talking about what they love about their neighborhood, and that can translate into something that eventually becomes permanent or semi-permanent, a mural, a sculpture, some sort of online resource, right? Like it could be a whole bunch of different things, but I think art is essential, right, in helping us think of our streets differently. Like it changes our thinking about the streets when we start to look at them as spaces for people and for creativity and for connection and, you know, for humanity.
Emily, you founded Living Streets Alliance. How did that work? Did you wake up one day and say, I should start a nonprofit?
I'm still have moments where I'm like surprised that it's me. And maybe that's not uncommon. For me, it was, I went to grad school because I was really interested in thinking about public spaces and design and thinking about how that, you know, enhances or detracts from people's quality of life, and was really interested in trying to figure out how I could help shape spaces. And during that time, Ciclovia got off the ground, and there was also a lot of conversation around the Bicycle Boulevard Network, which was just kind of the idea was just kind of coming to fruition. And there was actually a lot of discrepancy about whether to fund that sort of project and, you know, whether they were valid as a, you know, a bicycle facility. And so that was kind of where, you know, I would say the veil was lifted and we realized that we saw Ciclovia. We see that there are people that want these sorts of environments that feel safe and inviting and good. And yet our funding priorities don't align. And so we, you know, really realized there was a misalignment between what people want and what gets built. And that if we could collect, you know, bring our voices together and have a collective voice, we could really do something about that. And so that was really, I think, where I and other founders of the organization came together and decided we would figure it out, right? Like we didn't really know what we were doing or how to do it. We just kind of dove in and yeah, I've been doing it ever since.
I know that you have other organizations across the country who are kind of similar or sister organizations, but there are so many places that don't have people who are looking out for that kind of human-centered interests when it comes to shaping the built environment, and it shows.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have quite a few partners up in Phoenix who are kind of constantly saying, when can you come start something like this up here? Or like, can you come help up here? And, you know, it's not out of the question. And yet I think so much of this work is about centering community and understanding community. And that doesn't happen easily. In fact, that work is never done. And we're constantly learning about our communities here in Tucson and learning about ourselves and how we can do our work better and differently. And so it gets hard to think about how we could ever scale that out into other cities or other places. And yet I think there are probably things that are transferable too in terms of sharing, you know, sharing knowledge, sharing resources, sharing kind of what we've learned along the way. But yeah, I'd love to see this sort of stuff happening all over the place. And certainly I think Arizona, there's a lot of opportunity for that to happen here.
Emily, do you have any special stories about Living Streets Alliance that you'd like to share?
You know, this is one of my favorite stories, and it's actually not mine, which bothers me because I really wish I could tell it with an I. But a couple years ago, I want to say it was 2016, we did our first kind of street transformation project, and we did it down in Pueblo Gardens neighborhood with the school and neighborhood there. And we did these really amazing street murals through a all-day block party. And the murals were designed by students who attended the school there. And we had, you know, hundreds of people of all ages, like multi-generational, multicultural families come from the neighborhood and the school and get on their hands and knees and help paint these murals throughout the day. And, you know, it was incredibly moving and powerful. But at one point, my coworker shared this with us later. She she said she was standing off the side watching, you know, the action, kind of taking it all and smiling. And she noticed someone kind of down the street, like a neighbor who had walked out to the curb and, you know, was kind of looking down the street, checking it all out, but somewhat skeptical too, I think. Not sure what was going on or, you know, not sure if she wanted to join in. So my coworker went and talked to her. And it was interesting because what was revealed in their conversation was that, you know, this woman thought that it was the city there, that the city was coming and doing all of this beautification work in her neighborhood. And she said, you know, it's just nice to see that they care. And for me, like, that's a really important moment because our streets and what we do with them say a lot about the people that live there. And, you know, there's such an opportunity for people to embrace that and create places that they can be proud of, that their kids, that next generations can be proud of. And, you know, we heard from a lot of people that they were so happy that their kids got to be part of that project because now they would know that they created something and that it's theirs, right? And so that just that like simple, that simple expression, that simple sentence has always stuck with me because it tells you how much she felt that they were not seen and heard and cared for historically. And so maybe that became a moment where it restored a little bit of her connection to her community or her trust in local leadership, or I don't know. I like to think that that might have been a teeny tiny seed planted that day, and that one always sticks with me.
It says a tremendous amount about people feeling agency in their communities, mm-hmm. feeling that they can, you know, have the agency or the power to shape their own spaces where they live.
Absolutely.
And to be given that by leadership. I have noticed slow street signs in my neighborhood, and I would love for you to be able to talk about that.
So one of the things that, you know, we got a lot of calls and emails from folks right after the pandemic, you know, really hit hard and the stay-at-home order started and everyone is kind of cooped up at home, that there were a lot of families and just people who wanted to be able to, you know, take their kid out front and ride bikes in front of their house. And so we found that there were a lot of people that were, you know, creating do-it-yourself signage to try and semi-block off their block, right? To keep cars from speeding through, just to signal the drivers, like, yeah, if you're going to drive through here, like, keep an eye out. There are going to be kids and families out playing. And I even heard in one case that there were some garbage cans that, you know, people brought out to try and semi-block their block. And so anyways, we were hearing a lot about this, getting requests for support to try and figure out how they could do that legally. And I think the city of Tucson also heard that loud and clear. So the Department of Transportation and Mobility and each of the ward offices, I think, were contacted quite a bit by different residents saying, hey, we really need to get out in our streets and walk because it's good for our mental well-being right now. It's good for our health. We can't go to the gym. We can't go to the playground. And so, you know, we started looking around and certain cities were doing something called slow streets or healthy streets, where they basically created a really quick process to get barricades and signage out to designated residential corridors, so that people could have that space to do safe, social distanced recreation. And we were able to work with the city here and get that piloted. And it's actually, the pilot's still happening right now. They're about to roll it out in the third part of town. And so far, it's been really great. It's given, you know, people space to exercise, to be out and connect with each other, even if at a little bit of a distance. But we're really hopeful that this will grow and maybe even stick and become a permanent thing. So especially if, you know, the pandemic isn't going to go away anytime soon, it'd be nice to have this as an option to scale up down the road.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Emily.
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much, Ava.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. Support for Artist Stories is provided by Benjamin Supply, presenting a full spectrum of hardware and plumbing fixtures for kitchen and bath, and their gallery, Tucson, offering national and local art in both the Tucson Warehouse and Transfer Buildings on 6th Street and 7th Avenue. With products available at will call, they are currently open by phone at 777-7000 and at benjaminsupply.com or gallerytucson.com.